As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
Do you want to know how to slip into the Silicon Valley bloodstream? To meet the right people, and perhaps most importantly, to raise money? Then this week's guest on Danny in the Valley is the man for you.
I had to succeed. I did not have a choice of a failure.
Saeed Amidi is the founder of Plug and Play, which bills itself as the world's largest startup accelerator. Every year, thousands of companies come through his doors, and Amidi invests in an astonishing number of them, about three a week. He's had some very big hits in the past, including Dropbox, and in his earlier days, he gave Larry Page and Sergey Brin their first rented office space. He invested in them, too. Plug and Play is an interesting model and a very chaotic building, which is, I guess, what you would expect from a place that houses more than 450 companies. I've been there a few times now, and there's always a lot of nervous, unhealthy-looking engineers pacing the halls in hushed conversations, and delegations of executives streaming in and out. The ceilings are hung with flags from every country you can think of, and the walls are plastered with poster boards of past startups that have either been bought or gone public. Walking in is kind of like a sensory experience. It feels like a startup flea market. But Amidi sat down to explain the method to his madness, and how he went from rank outsider, newly arrived from Iran amid the revolution nearly 40 years ago, to what he is today, one of the best connected deal makers in Silicon Valley. Enjoy.
You know, I started Plug and Play about 10 years ago. And at that time, Y Combinator was, and still is, in my opinion, the best accelerator in the world. And as time went by, there was a lot of different people trying to do the same. You know, give some money, give some mentoring, give place to work. I feel, if you ask me, I think it has reached the point that you have to do something special to be an accelerator. And quite frankly, about 2-3 years ago, we like to call our different verticals innovation platform. And when you have an innovation platform, for example, for mobility.
Right, because here it's you have all 450 companies, but they're organized in kind of groups, right?
That's right.
So mobility, insurance.
We like to invest in the seed or A round. Usually the round, if it's a seed round, is $1 million. And we don't want to invest alone. So we will invest a couple of $100,000,
right,
like 200 to 300 max. Then when we participate in A round, we would like the A round to be $3 to $5 million. But by that time, usually there is one or two VCs involved. And again, myself and a group of angels, we may do $500,000 in that A round. But our ticket size is $100,000 to $200,000 per investment.
And so across the company, how many investments are you making per year?
In this location,
yeah,
I do about 150 investments.
A year.
A year. And in Europe, in Germany and France, I do about 50 investments a year. And specifically in China, we are planning to do between 50 to 100 investments per year.
That's a lot of investments.
A lot of praying. You know, we invest a little money and then we pray a lot.
Right, yeah. What was your biggest miss?
My biggest miss was Airbnb.
Oh.
The three founders were physically in this office.
Sitting right where I am?
No, actually they came to behind me in the little auditorium. We actually had shook hand on $400,000 investment for 20% Airbnb. And it was myself and Tim Draper.
Mm-hmm.
In that specific year, me and Tim would look at 4 startups per month, and we choose one to invest in. And that month, the flavor was Airbnb. And during the due diligence and the documentation and process, we thought perhaps some of these places that are renting space, there will be a big risk factor and liability. And I would say we chickened out. And that would have been perhaps
that's bigger than Dropbox. Investment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're worth about $30 billion now, supposedly.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And, you know, again, we would have been almost the first seed money in it.
$400,000 for 20%.
Yes. I think we did it at $2 million pre. It's a little bit. It would have been for like 18% of the company, 17%. $2 million pre, we were going to put in $400K. Again.
Does that keep you up at night?
None at all. None at all. I mean, like, I would have loved. I mean, I have had about 4 what we call unicorns. So I think I have been lucky enough to have a few great ones. And again, I just feel privileged to be on the path of these founders.
You just didn't buy the idea that people would want to stay at just a stranger's house.
I actually love the company, you know, because when I was a child, we used to go to Caspian Sea north of Tehran. And very soon the hotels and the motels would be full. So then you would have people with a little sign on the main street saying, I have a room for rent. And it was like, it's like an old business that has been modernized with, again, our smartphone and our computers. So I loved the idea. I thought it's going to take off, and Tim loved the idea. But quite frankly, a lot of investors at that time were scared of liability. And it happens that...
Well, if somebody trashes a place or something happens.
That's right.
Right.
And no more than that, if somebody would get physically hurt and if they had an early couple of big lawsuits, I think it would have damaged the company.
Right. Right.
But, it, you know, again, I can... say, like a lot of opportunities in life, I am lucky that I had that opportunity. Some of the decisions I make right and some of them wrong. And I have a very nice experience column that I put everything in there.
Right. Yeah. So can we go back to how you got here? Because you have not a typical path to becoming a, you know, a venture capitalist and running an accelerator.
I thought maybe you heard today that Dara Khosrowshahi just became the CEO of Uber.
Yeah.
He also has a pretty similar background to me. So I came to U.S. As a student to go through high school and college.
Here in the Bay Area.
That's right, at Menlo College here in Menlo Park. And quite frankly, I was planning to join the family business in Iran, and we had a little interest in banking.
What year was this?
A little interest in insurance. 1979. But most of our businesses were manufacturing and retail. The group was called Bella Group. But this little revolution in 1979 changed my plans. And quite frankly, that same summer, I started my first company, which is like packaging and a bottled water business called Alps
American. Was bottled water a thing in 79?
No, everybody thought I was really smart because at that time, it was funny, in American liquid packaging system, I invited 20 Coca-Cola bottlers and 20 Pepsi-Cola bottlers from around the world for us to show them that bottled water is going to be a big thing. And I didn't realize that Coke and Pepsi people don't come to the same seminar. So suddenly, 2 days before my seminar, all of the Pepsi people canceled. So this is going back 25 years ago. I helped to build 120 bottled water plants around the world. And then I kind of said, my God, the factories are making more money than me. So then I actually built 10 for myself through a joint venture.
Here in the States or all over the world?
All over the world. Right. From Paris to Spain to Austria to Norway. In fact, I had a plan to do 50 of them. But after 10, I ran out of money and ran
out
of
building
time.
Who are you bottling for?
Specifically, for example, in Spain, we did a joint venture with Guinness, which was owned by Diageo. Mm-hmm. Then we did a joint venture with Heineken. So in different countries, as the beer business or the beverage business stopped growing, the growth was less than 2% a year. When I proposed to them bottled water business, which was growing at 20% a year, they thought is a really interesting idea. And then actually we specialized in what I call home and office delivery, which is both more economical, ecological, and it's better for the environment. So that is the focus I have had for the last 25 years in bottled water business. And the interesting thing about plug and play and technology is every time I used to eat with my friends around Palo Alto, and I used to tell them I'm in bottled water business and packaging business, sitting on University Avenue, they thought I'm joking.
Right.
So that's kind of triggered us to make some what I call angel investing, primarily through friends around University Avenue. And when sort of PayPal wanted to move to our building, we were able to invest in PayPal.
So was it just a building you bought? Or?
Yeah, in fact, a lot of, because we also own Medallion Rug Gallery on University Avenue, some people combined the two. But actually, the Medallion Rug Gallery was a block or two away from my office, which I call it the Lucky Building, 165 University Avenue.
Why do you call it the Lucky Building?
It's because other than PayPal, Google moved in when they were three people, and they stayed there till they were 50 people. And then Andy,
in the rug gallery?
No. In your
building.
Office building. Yeah,
right.
165.
So
University.
You knew Larry and Sergey back in the day.
Yeah, and Omid Kordestani is my best friend, who helped to build Google. In fact, he always tells me a funny story. He says, "Saeed, when I went for my final interview, it was physically in your old office." So he thought it had a good feeling.
Right, right, right.
And I remember he said, "Saeed, I don't know if I should stay at AOL or join Google."
AOL was really big.
Big then, yeah. And then luckily enough, he chose to go to Google and help to build Google.
And so did you invest in Google?
We did, but not directly. At that time, we invested in Angel LLP, Ron Conway's little fund. and Ron invested in Google. So actually, it was really good because of the bubble, everybody lost money, but this Angel LLP fund did well because of the Google investment and a couple of other.
So did you make a bajillion dollars off your investment in Google?
I wish I could say yes, but we just pretty much two, three investments saved the fund.
Right.
But it was not a big return through that fund. We did much better with PayPal because it was a direct investment, and we did great with Dropbox, you know, because...
But Dropbox is still private.
Hmm. Yes, but there is a new thing in Silicon Valley. I mean, for some of the people who may not know it, there is an incredibly active second market. And if any company reaches even $500 million valuation, pretty much if you have credited buyers and sellers, you could buy and sell Uber shares or Dropbox shares.
So have you already sold out of Dropbox?
We are still have some shares, but we invested in Dropbox when it was worth less than $10 million. And when it reached $4 or $5 billion, we thought it's really cool. So we did exit the majority of our interest.
So can you say how much you made on that?
Yeah, we invested about $100,000 and change. And we had over $100 million return.
That's got to be the best you've best investment you've had.
Yes, actually, I do have a couple of investments that are at about 1,000x as well, but I haven't exited yet. But as far as realized return, yes, Dropbox has been the best we have ever done.
How'd you get into PayPal?
It was very interesting. PayPal actually, Peter Thiel came to rent a space from us
on that University
lucky
Avenue.
Building, in our lucky building.
Yeah.
And as my brother was negotiating the rent with Peter, he also negotiated to put in money in the seed round of PayPal.
Your brother did?
Yes, yes. On our behalf.
Right, right. Because it's you and your brother, this investment.
That's right, that's right.
And this is pre-plug-and-play. This is you guys.
This is way pre-plug-and-play. This is 25 years ago. So generally, we used to invest in 4 or 5 seed rounds per year. And then slowly, we started investing in 20 per year. And nowadays, as I mentioned to you, we still write small checks, but we do over 100. So.
Right. And how much did you put into PayPal?
I think we put about 100 as well, and that one was only 150x.
That's still terrible.
Very good, since it was 20 plus years ago.
Yes, coming to it from outside, the industry, was there a steep learning curve? Because I imagine, especially with professional venture capitalists, when they get involved, you might turn around and find that your great stake from your seed round ends up being minuscule, or you getting squeezed out.
You look like you're quite an athlete. Do you ever do judo?
I don't do judo, no.
Okay, so there is a move in judo that you sort of use the other person's weight to sort of, you use a weakness for a strength using the other person. And we always thought, as you said, that since we did not study engineering, since we were not involved in technology from beginning, we thought that is our weakness. So to turn that into a strength, we would not do an angel investment unless we had showed the startup to several VCs, several technology friends. All of our friends were involved in technology. You know, to give you like a direct example, one of our best investment was Lending Club, which we did the seed round with a couple of other angels.
And they went public a couple of years ago, right?
2014, December 8th. I think they went public at $6 billion valuation. But before investing in Lending Club, I had showed Lending Club to Jeff Crow of Norwest and several other VCs that they said, my God, if this peer-to-peer lending works, it can be a very big business and it can be a new category. So whatever we could not figure out ourselves, we would choose. Right now we choose corporations like Deutsche Bank, US Bank, Credit Suisse. So we show the technology and the idea to them. And if everybody lines up and says, this is such a great idea, we would love to invest, but it's a little early. As part of our due diligence these days, we show the startups to 20 corporations and 20 VCs, or what we call super angels.
Before you invest.
Before we make a decision. So, you know, we are from a part of Iran called Kashan that we are very scared or conservative, you could say. So we actually do quite a bit of due diligence ourselves. We have a very smart team members, but we also do verification by the purchaser of the technology, which is corporations, or great angels and VCs.
Right. What do entrepreneurs get out of coming here? Because, I mean, I've seen a lot of them. You walk around, you see, there'll be like tables and be like a paper that says, you know, company X or company Y.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even seem to be here necessarily. Is it about them just getting access to big corporates?
Yeah. You know, I mentioned to you that we have about 450 startups in the building. I would say approximately half of the startups are what we call permanent residents. They might come here when they are 2 to 3 people, and they usually leave when they are 20 to 30. And they stay with us for 2 years. The other half, they usually join one of our programs. And let's say for our insurance program, if you are one of the 30 companies that have been chosen while we reviewed 1,000 startups, if you are one of the lucky 30 and you join what we call our innovation platform for that batch, during the 3 months that the program is going on, you will be introduced to 50 insurance companies and 50 investors. And we feel if you have a good technology, at least 20 of the insurance companies would do a pilot and 10 of them will become a customer. And usually in 70% of the cases, if you're interested to raise money, you will be able to raise money by the end of the program. And we repeat this program every 6 months here in our headquarters. And recently we decided to have an InsurTech hub in New York and an InsurTech hub in Tokyo. So we will repeat the same process in New York, Tokyo, and then perhaps in Paris. With BNP Paribas, we do have an InsurTech hub as well.
Nothing in London.
I can't say anything, but it's something may happen very soon in London.
Do 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 do.
I usually tell people if I tell you, then I have to kill you. Yeah. But I thought maybe
this is on the record now. So
this
yeah.
Time. Yeah. Yeah.
Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How many corporate partners do you have?
We have very close to 200.
Do the entrepreneurs or the companies themselves, do they are they effectively paying you rent to be here as well, or how does that work?
The startups, while they are in one of our programs, do not pay us rent. So they are welcome to stay here 3 to 6 months. But when the program is finished and we have graduation, which we call it's an expo, pretty much the program is finished. But if the startup sees the benefit of being here, then they may choose to rent a couple of desks if they are out of state or out of country startup. But some of them choose to move the whole headquarters here.
Right.
But during the program, we help the startup raise money. We help the startup do business development and get customers. And most importantly, they become part of community. Like, quite frankly, in InsurTech, we think we have the best innovation platform in the world. So to be just part of this platform, you suddenly are recognized in the world and a lot of doors open.
And so you have 200 companies who are all paying for access to these startups. So this sounds like it's a cross between, you know, just a technology accelerator and also just a quite lucrative real estate model.
No, somebody told me, Saeed, you should change the name from Plug and Play to Plug and Pay. but quite frankly, to run one of these innovation platform is not easy. You know, we are, like, for example, at Money 2020 in Las Vegas coming up, we run the startup track. That means we bring all of the startup to Las Vegas. They would present. We have to go to every major show in the world. Like in insurance business, there is a most prestigious insurance gathering roundtable called Geneva Associate. Is the top 80 insurance companies in the world, CEOs gather, and they have asked us to participate and show them where is the future of insurance. But generally, we travel constantly, both to these different insurance companies' headquarters, different events. We ourselves hold over 300 events here in Plug and Play. Specifically for InsurTech, we may have 20 events per year here. And, you know, you could sort of say we make a lot of money, but we also actually spend a lot of money building this innovation platform. And my personal goal is to find the Uber or the Airbnb of the insurance business. And when I do that, similar to getting lucky and investing in Lending Club or PayPal or Dropbox, I think that is the return we are actually looking for.
Right. And that one return makes it all work financially.
It's if I can tell you what sort of makes me tick, one is, of course, I'm looking for that return. I think that's your scorecard. But more importantly, to be part of the game, to be part of the industry and be recognized as an investor, as an innovation platform that we help startups succeed. Quite frankly, I think the journey, I mean, to watch a game or to watch a sport is wonderful. But if you can really play it, it's even more fun.
Yeah.
So I really am sort of proud and lucky and grateful that we are part of the game. It's quite an exciting game that will change the world via technology. And to sort of matter in this world, I think it's great. And I enjoy if entrepreneur comes and says, Saeed, three out of the most important things in our journey came through Plug and Play. The three most important contacts, three most important customers, that kind of makes me a happier guy.
Right.
And if I made money, that's even better.
Of course. Yeah. Is there an issue around this idea of tech tourism? Because you have a lot of international companies here who kind of come to Silicon Valley for a little bit of
love and touch.
Yeah, tech magic dust.
Yeah.
And you see, you talk to these companies, you're like, okay, so what'd you, oh, I went to Facebook and then I met this VC and then I saw some companies and then I went back home and told my boss I did that and isn't this great? And it was like a really nice expensive week in California, but
that's
produced
right.
Nothing.
You know, I think everything starts with technology tourism. You know, to give you a specific example, one of my best partners out of Germany is Axel Springer, a media company you may know. So they started their exposure to Silicon Valley 5 years ago when a couple of the executives came and even lived here for a year. And then they went back and they helped the media company digitally transform themselves. And because of that, I would say they are much more profitable and they are doing great. I think they just recently purchased a company in New York. I will think about the name soon. So the whole idea is we get 10,000 visitors a month.
Here?
In Plug and Play. And I would say 80% of them is just they want to see what's happening. We get visitors, you know, like Mr. Jokowi, or I should call him President Jokowi of Jakarta. When he comes to Silicon Valley, he's part of the tour. Usually it's Google, Facebook. It used to be Cisco, but is no longer Cisco. So now my Cisco friends will hate me. But it used to be Cisco, HP, even Intel. But right now the cool places to visit is Stanford, Plug and Play, Facebook, Google. Uber has become cool, and Airbnb has become cool. They have a really cool office. But after the first couple of trips, some of these big global corporations, they actually go through innovation transformation. So right now, majority of our corporate partners have chief innovation officer or chief digital officer. And I don't think it's any longer tourism. I really think they need to try to be more innovative faster than ever before. if they don't want to be sort of like Nokia or Motorola.
Or Palm or Palm. Any of these guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it starts with, you know, I would say a first visit. But some of the companies are incredibly serious about it. And they take advantage of what is happening in Silicon Valley.
2 years ago, say, there's tons of unicorns being minted. There was, you know, 120 or whatever it was, a large number. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those have gone away or quietly been bought for a lot less or collapsed or whatever. Do you think we're already on the backside of that? Or do you think we still have a long way to go and that, you know, I spoke with Mark Andreessen very recently and he said, you know, we're just kind of getting started because there's a whole industries like insurance that haven't really been touched yet that now tech is kind of aiming at.
I must say I agree with him, you know, because if you say the first set of technologies that really took off, it's the social media, search, a lot of B2C businesses that have changed everybody's life. And I feel this new wave of technology will improve productivity in the industrial world. It improves productivity in the banking, in insurance. You know, if you talk in retail right now, there is one big competitor, Amazon, that everybody is going after. But I personally feel in each industry that we touch, and even if it is automotive industry, if it's electronic industry, we are at the tip of the iceberg that the industry is embracing change, embracing technology, and entrepreneurship. A lot of big corporations right now are trying to go to a cultural change that instead of centralized control, they want to try new products, new services fast and even fail fast. So, and I feel this where we live, it's going to be in the center of all future changes.
Right.
You know, I must say I am surprised. You know, because we built a platform in Stuttgart called Startup Autobahn, and now we have Mercedes, Porsche, HP involved, and we have been able to do 62 pilots in the last 90 days.
What, startups doing pilots at big corporates?
Yes.
Right.
And when I had my last expo in Stuttgart, 850 people showed up to look at 28 startups. The 28 startups were from 12 countries, a few from Germany. But I think this whole innovation, technology, transformation is contagious. And I would dare to say there is going to be a lot of exciting technologies coming out of China and Europe.
Is there not a difference, though, in the level of ambition here? Where, you know, somebody says, I'm going to change the world, and you don't get laughed out of the room. Where having, I lived in London for 13 years. If you said that to anybody in London, you would get laughed out of the room.
Yeah. You know, the Europeans, the Germans and Japanese are much more conservative and humble. But I think that is even changing. If you take China in particular, if you take Alibaba or Tencent or number of technologies, I think actually they will have more unicorns than US. But it is the sort of the mentality that needs to change.
You have to change the chip, so to speak.
And I think it is changing even in Paris or Berlin. I mean, like, I am a very early adopter, so I might be, again, 10 years too early. But I am very optimistic about the future of investing and technology. And there is a lot to come still.
So you see thousands of entrepreneurs a year. Here in particular, it's quite international. Is there one thing that you think people misunderstand about the Valley and how it works and about how to create a company here, and you arrive here and you have your idea and then dot, dot, dot?
So I would say, just to give you some numbers, 70% of the companies we invest in has either a founder that is immigrant, or you could say early team members that are immigrant. And why is that important? You know, as a Iranian immigrant, I didn't have somebody that would take care of me. So I had to work harder. I had to try harder. And quite frankly, I had to succeed. I did not have a choice of a failure. And if you see the teams that we invest in, we would love to see that passion and want to win attitude. And I mean, like, quite frankly, I love people who study at Stanford, Carnegie Mellon, University of Waterloo, but technically they are savvy enough to build what they want. But if they don't have the extra drive, extra passion, and I call it to be hungry for success, it's a long road to build a company. So I feel that is almost more important than the technical capability.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Dan.
Cheers.
And that's it. A very big thank you to Saeed for talking today in his very busy office, literally the entire time we were speaking. He had people kind of scurrying in and out in the background trying to get him messages. He's a man in demand. But I too have a demand, or rather a plea. Go to Apple Podcasts, give a rating and review. It really does help. We've got lots of great feedback, so please do keep it coming. I really do appreciate it. It's always great to hear from people. And in the meantime, you will find me, as ever, in the newspaper at the Sunday Times, online at thetimes.co.uk, on Twitter at Danny Fortson, and you'll find Danny in the Valley, of course, on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts. Until next week, thanks very much.